Hello, and thanks for listening to This is Yoga Therapy. I'm your host, Michelle Lawrence. This podcast is a venue for sharing topics in the field of yoga therapy today. Whether you're a yoga teacher, yoga therapist, healthcare provider, or individual with curiosity, this is the place to learn about the latest ideas, personal healing stories, research, and work that is cutting edge and making a difference. While you're here, expect to expand your knowledge on the emerging field that is yoga therapy. In today's episode of This is Yoga Therapy, I had the opportunity to interview Smitha Malaya. Smitha Malaya serves as the program director at Esvyasa USA Houston Center. She received her master's in yoga therapy from Esvyasa Yoga University at Bangalore, India. Smitha has been practicing yoga therapy for specific ailments for over 16 years at various hospitals and clinics. Some of her special areas of expertise include cancer, children with special needs, pre- and postnatal care, post-traumatic stress disorders, and others. She has conducted many yoga teacher training programs, yoga therapy training courses, personality development camps for children, retreats, and other courses at Vyasa Houston. In addition to yoga practice and philosophy, she has also studied psychology, Ayurveda, naturopathy, and chaplaincy, which gives a holistic approach to her patient care. She is passionate about studying the impact of yogic lifestyle changes for disease management and patient-related outcomes. Smitha works as Senior Mind-Body Intervention Specialist at the University of Texas MD Anderson Cancer Center's Integrative Medicine Program. At MD Anderson, she is involved in developing and teaching yoga research interventions for different cancer populations like breast, lung, and brain cancers. She also works with couples going through a cancer journey using yoga and meditation. On the clinic side, she works alongside other integrative medicine clinicians, seeing inpatients and outpatients going through cancer from diagnosis through end of life using yoga therapy. She has co-authored yoga publications and has presented her work at national and international conferences on the efficacy of yoga in cancer care. It's so great to have you here today, Smitha.
Thank you, Michelle. Pleasure is mine. I'm excited to be here.
Since you and I have never met in person yet, I'd love to know more about you, your background, and your story. I believe I'm correct in understanding that you grew up in India, and I imagine that you've been immersed in yoga most of your life. So can you share with our listeners, what was your childhood like and what was it that drew you to yoga therapy at age 17?
Yes, thank you. And every time I go back to memories of what brought me to yoga, I still feel thrilled and thankful going back to those memories. So just like many other teenagers, people growing up in India, I grew up in Bangalore, which is a huge city and very busy and quite globalized and impacted by Western culture. I was interested in a lot of activities, dance, music, others. But most importantly, that is relevant to the experience of yoga and my path into yoga. My father was an avid yoga practitioner, and he found yoga when he met with a horrible accident, which ended up with a spinal fracture. And he went to get yoga therapy from Dr. Nagarath in the 1970s, who today is my mentor and guru in yoga therapy, if I can say. He would do practice of yoga every day. And it was unusual, interesting for us as kids to watch all the maneuvers in asanas. And the most fun part was actually the kriyas. If he did the Jalaneti, it would be just so fascinating. And we would jump, you know, calling it probably magic. With him, I did learn postures and would teach it to, you know, children of some underserved populations, just as a passion to continue to do yoga and to teach something to children. But like many other of my peers, I was getting ready to get into an engineering or a medical school. That's what you do. You listen to your parents, be good, study, and get a formal degree and profession. And to kind of like answer what shifted in my teenage years to be drawn to yoga is I was on track for an engineering course, and on a break, I went to yoga certification program, what here in US we call as a 200-hour certification. And that program is what totally blew me away. So I went to SVASA Bangalore, and for those of maybe our listeners who might not be very aware of this place, I would like to just say a couple sentences about it to introduce. So SVASA Yoga University, or what we call as Swami Vivekananda Yoga Anusandhana Samsthana, is actually the world's first formal yoga university that offers programs for students from simple instructor certifications to MDs for doctors or PhDs. So the university is based off the ideals of Swami Vivekananda, who in the 1800s brought yoga to America as well. And his ideals were also on basically combining the best of East, which we understand as yoga and spiritual lore, with the best of the West, which is the modern scientific research tools. So this place has been around for over 4 decades, working towards making yoga as a socially relevant science, and especially looking at it from the scientific lens. So at this university, when I visited, they had this world-class research facility. And when I went to the course, I'm like, I'm going to probably do some stretches and have some activities and I'll be fine. I'll come back and go back to my school. But at this research facility, which today is actually a world-class research facility, which was founded about 30 years ago, it was established with the long-sighted belief to restore the lost heritage and tradition of yoga practices with an evidence base. And you might know, or you would be interested, that our first randomized controlled trial of yoga in asthma patients was published in a very reputed journal like British Medical Journal in 1985. And this was like spearheading the field in the right direction when people were not even thinking of randomized controlled trials for yoga. So you can only imagine, as a teenager, when you're exposed to yogic wisdom, where there are not just higher ideals of intellect, which we see kind of like in science and medicine and research, but also experiencing the emotional, spiritual levels, what we call as higher states of human life, was valued equally like no other science has. So I was awesome. And that happens to me even today when I talk about it, when I see people bringing and working in the field, and have never looked back. And I completely owe this to my gurus, my teachers, who have supported me additionally and continue to guide me. So that's how I found yoga as a teenager, and I've been continuing in the field as a path even today.
What a great story. Thank you so much for sharing that. And it certainly is very intriguing to me, right? Someone who has never studied yoga in India, but has such a yearning to do so and obvious respect mm-hmm. for the heritage and the tradition that we practice here now. So I'm curious to learn more about it. And I know that's where we're going to go in this interview here next. So you're the program director at SVASA USA Houston Center now, and you offer yoga therapy services and certification mm-hmm. programs. And so I'm curious if you could tell us, how does yoga therapy in India differ from yoga therapy in the US? And I'd love to know more about the yoga therapy certification program at SVASA as well.
If you had asked me the same question 10, 15 years ago, I would kind of like probably have much clearer answers, especially maybe looking at from the perspective of India. I could probably point out to everything here at US and say, this is what you guys do differently, and this is what we guys do differently. And I don't know if I'll become unpopular answering some of these questions, because my friends on both sides would probably want me to say a little more or a little less, but I will try to answer to the best of my ability with some observations. And I want listeners to kind of like take it with a grain of salt. And I do come from a very non-judgmental perspective to kind of like understanding the pros and cons of both. And again, the lines for the differences are blurring, I can say, due to the impact of globalization, because yoga does come from India, but just like many other things, the world looks at America for, you know, leading the way in certain sense. So I can see that some of these kind of like still hold good, but kind of like are blurred as well. So I can say maybe yoga in America is more popular among the masses than yoga in India, especially if I kind of like look back a few years when I went to maybe school to study yoga. And yoga is such a fashion. Everybody does yoga. Do you go to your yoga class and things like that? But actually now, thanks to our current Prime Minister of India, Narendra Modi, who got us the International Yoga Day, yoga is more popular in India today than ever. But just the craze and the fashion about it is definitely different in America than in India. I knew coming from yoga, a lot of different yoga lineages. We have all these different schools of yoga, texts and scriptures of yoga that has given us thoughts and different schools. But actually, I caught myself off guard when I kind of like started seeing chocolate yoga, yoga, naked yoga. I mean, you name it. You like have it there. And initially, my reaction would be kind of like, I would be annoyed or upset. And I'm like, oh my gosh, what are you doing in the name of yoga? And all kind of emotions and reactions would come to it. But again, there is this adaptability that if that is what is sold and if people are able to do and benefit from it, by the end of the day, why not bringing, you know, yoga in a package that is more relevant or acceptable to people? The big difference of yoga in India and US is definitely the commercialization of yoga in US is to a degree that is unimaginable. And this year alone, by 2020, we are supposed to be an $11 billion industry. If we are not already, yoga clothing, props, you name it. All this probably was unheard or probably even unimaginable. And I do know I value the gift of every society, and the gift of American society has been the economic progress. And how do I wonder that why here in America? It is definitely something that is very applicable for this culture and population. And in India, even today, if you see yoga schools, classes, I even now visit India every year or so and have the comfort of teaching or attaining classes, and people come in comfortable clothing. It doesn't have to be yoga clothing. There is no fancy Lululemon outfits that is needed. And I've even seen my guru, Dr. Nagaratna, herself teach yoga postures. So she's a medical doctor by profession, and she would be in a sari and get up from her consultation and do a yoga pose or do a yoga practice completely in her sari and still be very comfortable. And I myself have taught classes without being in the perfect gear, if I can say so. So the whole idea that the external things are secondary is important, because if these becomes the basis of practicing yoga, they start dictating or guiding the practice, rather than if these become secondary, then I or myself as the tool becomes the most important thing to be in the path of yoga. Going on to another interesting difference, and again important, I believe, that I've seen in both the cultures, countries, is the teacher-student dynamic. And when you kind of like go back to India, which has a very long and rich cultural heritage coming from the Vedic culture, the student-teacher dynamic comes from the Vedic concept of Guru-Shishya Parampara, which is teacher-disciple traditions. And we do also know that that is how all these rich cultural practices were passed on, including yoga. So this is a very strong part of the culture, both in and outside of yoga. So the teacher is very revered or respected, and his or her word is absolute. A student serves the teacher out of respect and gratitude, and there is a lot of etiquette in how you talk, sit, interact, all those etiquettes that comes within the culture, and also that is applicable for the yoga practice and yogic learning. But in US, it's more of a casual, and there is no need for the students to be very formal with the teacher. There is more of an relaxed, informal conversations. And sometimes there is no necessity even for the teachers probably to acknowledge or to be associated with the learning or the teacher or the lineage, which is not 100% true, again, for some of my Western friends who are more into that as well. But it is not something as a very common practice that is taken for granted or understood. And another important kind of like maybe one of my last observations, if I can pull in few points under that, would be the yoga in the West, especially in the United States, gained the popularity and momentum as a physical practice. So it's also looked at, some of the tools of yoga therapy or yoga are looked at as different. Say, if I say to somebody that I teach yoga, there is no common understanding that I teach meditation. So practices are looked at as different, but wherein if you meditate, if you do yoga, if you do, you know, pranayama, all that is looked at as an umbrella practice under the umbrella of yoga in India than in US. Also, the physical popularity of yoga might have resulted in the interest not only in yogic practices, but the perfection and ultimate goal of yoga limiting to physical yoga practices. And we can see a lot of times a basic level beginner teachers might not be exposed to a lot of yoga philosophy, a lot of, you know, 200-hour certifications and things like that, focus more on the physical aspects of yoga rather than the other, which is the philosophy and the whole approach to yoga. And we know from yogic literature and the practices itself, yoga started with yamas and niyamas, and it was important for the practitioner to hold the self accountable, not only at the postures and the bendings, but also from the basics and foundations, which we call as yamas, niyamas, and many other that can be drawn from many different schools and cultures of yoga. So these, I think, kind of like are some common standout differences. And again, as I say, there is definitely cross-pollination and there is more learning from more both sides happening. And probably in a few years, if we don't see huge differences, I won't be surprised, Michelle.
What a comprehensive and beautiful answer. You did that so well and so conscientiously too. Thank you. So let's get to the second part of that, if you don't mind, too, about the certification programs at SVIASA in Houston.
Oh, absolutely. So again, at VIASA, we have been offering courses in Houston Center for about 15 to 20 years. And this used to happen whenever our teachers used to visit. There used to be courses conducted and small certification programs conducted. And with the global need of having structured yoga therapy programs for the yoga therapy field to evolve in the right direction, we brought a two-year yoga therapy certification program. So back in India, usually this is a post-graduation diploma, which is for 2 years. Or we also have masters in yoga therapy back in India that is applicable. But due to, you know, university grants and different structure, we couldn't bring in the exact same courses. So here we have something what we call as yoga therapy training certification, or YTTC. This is a 2-year program with in-person classes split into 4 semesters. And the requirement is, just like many other schools, it's a 200-hour program requirement with some teaching background and a commitment to come into the yoga therapy field that is important. This 2-year period is followed by at least a year to 18 months of time allocated for practicum. So students can get hands-on experience working with patients and patients of all different ailments or diseases that yoga therapy can help with. So these correspond with their models that they have learned in the classrooms and so on and so forth. The course also, the idea is it has the best in the balance of not only practices, but also philosophy. And other part is not only that our students are immersed in evidence-based yoga therapy or day-to-day modern yoga research that continues to pour in the field, but also with the yogic text exploration. So a lot of times we tend to limit at, okay, there is some evidence base coming in and we have some basics, we are good. But a lot of this information is sometimes looked at or confused as, oh, somebody, you know, 5 years ago, 10 years ago said this or brought this work out. But if you truly see, there is a vast ocean of texts or scripture base that the yoga therapy draws from. So there is a good balance between modern research that pours out, as well as we encourage students to go to the original source of the texts. And many of these yoga texts are part of their course as well. So there is, of course, as we say, all tools of yoga therapy, which are asana, pranayama, mudra, bandha, meditation, yoga nidra, you name it. And yoga therapy protocols that are used for patient populations are developed using yoga, evidence-based yoga that comes from the research studies and with an approach of patient-centered yoga therapy. And most importantly, yoga as a lifestyle. So it's not necessarily with many other forms of medicine or therapies. You come in with a system, symptom, we give you a practice and you're done. But this is looking at the fundamental change that our lifestyles are needing in today's life and how yogic approach can address the fundamental lifestyle change. This is what our students go through in this 2 to about 3.5 year course. And we have practicum opportunities around some clinics in Houston and one-on-one yoga therapy and things like that.
Sounds like a great program. Thanks for sharing that.
Thank you.
You also work as Senior Mind-Body Intervention Specialist at the University of Texas MD Anderson's Cancer Center Integrative Medicine Program. So I have several questions about this, and I'm sure our listeners do too. We just start with the first question here. How is yoga therapy utilized at MD Anderson?
MD Anderson, as many of our listeners might know, you can say it's world's number one cancer institute in terms of research, the data, the size, the amount of patients MD Anderson sees, everything. So about 2 decades ago is when MD Anderson's then Integrative Medicine Center's director, Dr. Lorenzo Cohen, and in those days it was called as a wellness center, and eventually it has evolved as not an alternative therapy, not a wellness program, but more as an integrative therapy that can be actively integrated into cancer patients' treatment regimen. So since about 2 decades, as I mentioned, it started with yoga research. So Vyasa Bangalore has done yoga research in cancer population, which was inspiring to MD Anderson, and MD Anderson collaborated with SVASA Bengaluru to carry out some research protocols. And to that day, which is about 10 years ago in 2010, one of the largest ever funded yoga trials, the funding was given to MD Anderson to study yoga in breast cancer patients. So from then on, there has been many studies done in breast cancer population, in the populations like brain cancer, lung cancer, head and neck cancers, and many more. So most activities so far has been in the area of research. And if you see and understand, you and I know that in the field of healthcare, where many things are decided by insurance, we need good, solid research to have a foundation to move yoga therapy in the right direction so that this can be covered as an offering to our patients. And if you can only see, you know, patients who are impacted by cancer or diseases like this, if they have to pay something out of their pocket to get this, that would be an added burden. And if we can gather the information and science to understand, that would make so much more sense in moving yoga therapy in the right direction. And in this research, we're into different areas of health, like, can yoga be used to reduce treatment side effects? Can it improve physical and mental health function, quality of life? Can it actually add to the cost effectiveness? Do patients who practice yoga, do they have less health complications or health issues than patients who don't? So these are some of the questions and areas that we have tried to explore in our past research at MD Anderson, and we continue to have some research studies to do the necessary work that is required in the field. Apart from yoga research, another area that we had services for patients was outpatient group classes, where patients and families could attend these yoga classes and benefit, but these were not necessarily goal-oriented in terms of specific disease. Say, for example, somebody going through breast cancer, many different set of practices than somebody going through head and neck cancer. But they were still very beneficial, as it was kind of like aimed at safe practices that can be integrated into patients' routine. But recently, MD Anderson, again, leading the way in having services open for inpatients and outpatients. So inpatients who are admitted can request services for fatigue, pain, insomnia, and other areas where yoga therapist goes to their room as inpatients and deliver yoga therapy. And when I say yoga therapy, this is not added on with another appointment or anything. A full yoga therapy session for an hour or so is delivered in inpatients, and same services are available for outpatients for post-cancer rehabilitation that might be more based off symptomatic events at the physical level, or even for gaining and restoring health and well-being at an overall personality level. So basically, at this time, this is what is offered at MD Anderson, which I'm extremely happy and proud. And every time there is a little step up in the right direction for the field of yoga therapy, we have to realize that this is not necessarily the work of one person. Hundreds and thousands of people in the field are working towards this goal as well.
Well, thank you. Really, I feel so grateful to you and the others that are doing this work to bring the profession of yoga therapy into the hospital setting. And, you know, I think you should be happy and proud, and we all should be grateful for this work. And like you said, the work that so many others are doing in this direction. So what advice do you have for new yoga therapists as to how to get clients or work in a hospital setting? And what are some of the challenges you face as a yoga therapist at MD Anderson?
I would say prepare yourself. And for every yoga therapist out there, I know with the standardizations to training, a lot of us come from many different backgrounds. But if you understand yoga therapy as a field, as a practice that has so much to offer, we always will have something that we can offer to these people. So knowledge is the key. And when you start learning and start practicing as yoga therapist, something that I have learned from day one and practiced myself is documentation of yoga therapy that I practice with my clients. And again, if you know and understand even medicine, you know, people say, I practice medicine, because there is this continuous learning curve that continues to expand and it will never end. So even as a yoga therapist, documenting what is working for patient A and patient B is going to give you a big learning curve of just enhancing your knowledge in getting into clinic settings, hospital settings itself. Apart from this, something that always has helped me, especially coming from an institute like SVSA, is the evidence-based research understanding. And the understanding that is important is not just that, oh, there is a lot of yoga research that is coming out. Everybody should be practicing yoga, or you should practice yoga, but actually with even more responsibility to understand what do we have evidence for and what do we don't have the evidence for. So it's important that you keep yourself always updated with the new research that is coming out. And to make this whole process a little more easier, I would recommend you one of not very new books, but one of the recent books that came a few years ago into the field was principles and practices of yoga therapy. Very four eminent authorities in the field of yoga therapy research has edited, published, and put this book together. And what the book basically has is the research for every area that you can think of. And it very clearly discusses what is the scope of your practice for each area and how much do we know and what we don't know actually. So if I am approaching a doctor, if I'm approaching a clinic or a hospital, I always have my students prepare their case, let them know what they know in the field and what they don't, and how their yoga therapy is going to add value to a clinic setting or to a hospital setting. So I do have a lot of students that are going through mentoring right now to become yoga therapists. And this is one of the advices that I do, that use something like book, which is credible, or you also have other journals and PubMed and places like that where you can gather this. So approaching and convincing, having some scientific evidence, goes a long way. Lastly, but not leastly, it's also important that you make connections in the field. And we do have sessions where we discuss about referring out or getting referrals in. So if in your community you have integrative practitioners, maybe a physical therapist, maybe a massage therapist, maybe acupuncturist, anybody who is considered an alternative integrative practitioner, you please make connections with them and have continuous dialogues with these people in the role yoga therapy can play. One of the things that I've personally done at MD Anderson is anytime I have an opportunity to talk to a group of nurses, talk to a group of doctors, I make the effort to make my presentation in the most simple yet most detailed research backup is given to these conversations so people can start understanding the scope of yoga therapy and where it can fill the gap in the care. Because there are therapies for physical fitness or physical manipulation. There are therapies just for talking or counseling or others. But yoga really brings a very unique perspective in building the bridge and filling the gap in care. And we really do need that in our healthcare today to fill that gap. So these would be some of the pointers that I would say for young practitioners or people who are looking forward to getting into the hospital or clinic industry to be prepared, but also continue to learn as you are in the field.
That's great advice. And I couldn't agree more. Thank you so much for saying it so well. And anything else on that challenge aspect that you face as a yoga therapist at MD Anderson?
Thank you. Yes. So I think when I look at the challenges, as you might agree, I also look at them as opportunities. Because if it was not a challenge, then I don't have an opportunity to make it any better or different. So some of the things that I very commonly see with patient population is I continuously try to demystify some of the myths or the misconceptions. I've had so many patients that I call and I'm like, hey, I'm so-and-so. I work at this hospital. I see that you're coming in for treatment and I'm calling in to see if you would like to participate in a yoga study or a yoga class. And one of the first things that a lot of patients have said is like, oh, honey, I'm not a yoga type. You have not seen me. So there is a lot of misconceptions in I need to be a certain weight to do yoga. I need to be a certain age to do yoga. Or if I'm not keeping well, I shouldn't be doing yoga. Of course, there are contraindications and safety precautions should be taken. So working at a hospital setting, one of the things that even sometimes your doctors or nurses or healthcare professionals would do is, oh, you don't need to do yoga right now, you know, rest. Because they themselves may not be aware of what yoga therapy can offer. Yoga therapy can offer actually deep rest that can help patients' fatigue levels. It's not only working out or physical practices. So a lot of challenge and opportunity is about sharing and educating patients, frontline healthcare workers, about what is yoga therapy, and there is research out there about it, and things like that. And then I also kind of like see this in a funny way, but making yourself needed or creating the demand for yourself. Because a lot of times, if the administration or the hospital or the patients don't know what your role is, they may not want to add one more thing on their plate while they are sick, and especially while they're going through something like cancer. So really kind of like bringing that need. And once the patients or the clinicians know the good effects or the positive outcomes of yoga therapy, then they're more likely to embrace it. Most importantly, also if you're new to the field, working in a hospital clinic setting, something that I have made myself very mindfully take this approach is to be really open to listening to the needs of not just our patients, but also our frontline healthcare providers. Because you might want to go and fix thing A, but patients might actually need help with B. And you might want to go do something and help patients in a way, but your doctor or the healthcare providers want you to help with C, D, or something else. So having really an open mind and an open ear and kind of like really assessing their needs and coming up with yoga therapy proposals to meet their needs would help our students, therapists get, also would kind of like help them not be on the defense to kind of like having to protect their identity with yoga therapy and some of the other waters that we can run into. Again, I think making connections and presenting, knowing people goes a long way. And I think I've seen that from a simple clinic you walk in to if you have to really make big changes at the federal level or the policy level, knowing goes a long way. So make those connections and keep connected.
Yeah, that's great advice too. So I'm curious, because you do work in a hospital setting, and I imagine you've been impacted in some way by the COVID pandemic. So I have two questions really related to this. One is, how has the pandemic impacted your work as a yoga therapist in the hospital? And then separate from that, what role do you think that yoga therapy has in the prevention and or the recovery from the virus?
Yes, I think COVID has impacted everyone, and yoga therapy was no different from that. But also in some cases, yes and no. We did have a lot of in-person visits, like with inpatient, outpatient settings. And we did have research that we used to do. And who knew we would have thought of COVID in earlier times. But we did have protocols that we tried to deliver yoga therapy virtually even before COVID happened. So I personally, as a yoga therapist, had a great learning curve since about 3 or 4 years. I've been doing a lot of virtual teaching using yoga therapy with patients. So it kind of like had prepped me to what are things that you need to know when you work with clients virtually. How do you, you know, get them prepared? Where needs to be the angle of their phone, iPad, or camera? How do you place mats? How do you do an intake assessments and things like that? So that part of it, I'm continuing to see clients even with COVID, even though I'm working from home, still in Texas, since we see our cases are still on the rise. I'm continuing to see our patients virtually. Now, something that is in the books of happening is expanding and opening up all of our integrative medicine services at MD Anderson. So some services are right now at halt, but we are actively preparing protocols and SOPs that are needed so that we can open these services back to everybody that walked through the doors just like before we have been. But something that actually happened as a positive side of COVID is whole MD Anderson actually joins in every single day for a meditation break at noon that I'm leading for about 2 months now, which before, I don't know if we wouldn't have thought about it. But now MD Anderson has an employee pool of about 22,000 people and more volunteers, fellows, everybody who comes in. And we have hundreds of people every day joining in for a virtual meditation. And we are connected in that way.
So important work. Thank you for doing that. Yeah. What about the virus itself?
Absolutely.
And I'm so glad that you're able to continue doing what you're doing via telehealth or virtually, and that you had that established ahead of time mm-hmm. probably made a big difference for you and for them. And for all of us who are now learning how to do the virtual thing, right? There's been a steep learning mm-hmm. curve that you didn't necessarily have to endure in the moment, which is excellent. But yeah, I'm curious about your thoughts in terms of the virus itself and if there has been any look into yoga therapy practices that are helpful with prevention or recovery. I know there's been some research that is starting in this area. I don't know a lot about it yet, though.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. So as yoga, Ayurveda, and the ancient Vedic sciences refer to, there is a lot more importance to prevention than cure. So even preparing before getting the virus or before the disease happening at the body level is itself very important. And from the lifestyle perspective, building a good immunity is what becomes important. And with COVID, we have seen, actually now we are seeing more symptoms than initially us understanding it as more of a respiratory challenge and symptoms that are related to the respiratory system. So a lot of practices, again, even before the exposure to the virus or the disease has happened, empowering the immunity. We know from very good established yoga research and studies pointing that yoga practices can actually improve your immunity, improve the immune cells to work better, to have less stress. So if immune system is in a better condition, it is better prepared to fight the virus itself. Of course, we know with the understanding of yoga and yoga practices that pranayama, breathing exercises can help in empowering and preparing your respiratory system to be in good condition so that even if somebody is exposed, they may recover and be more resilient to this itself. And in case if there is exposure, a continued practice of yoga, breathing, rest can help recuperate soon. And it also can help in the recovery phases. And the principles of yoga, like the shaucha, the cleanliness, cannot be of given any more importance than during these times of COVID that we are trying to practice social distancing, cleanliness, and, you know, wearing masks and whatnot. But some of these principles have been so well established in the yoga philosophy thousands of years ago. And this is actually the advantage of practicing yoga as a complete way of life rather than just a physical practice or a posture, that you have more advantages that is given to healthy living and lifestyle, and immunity is built from within. At MD Anderson, I do have to say, we have a protocol that we are actually rolling out for frontline health workers, where we are giving them a short yoga pranayama meditation practice so that we want to test their resiliency and see if that can help the frontline workers be more prepared. Also, it can help actually with the stress, and something that we are seeing recently, but more often, is the burnout in frontline health workers, which needs to be addressed. And yoga cannot be a better tool than yoga and yoga practices to address this gap as well.
That's great. Thank you. And rings so true to me. Yeah. So appreciate your perspective on that. So finally, and I like to ask this question of each of our guests, in our training programs at Inner Peace Yoga Therapy, we teach our students who are studying to become yoga therapists that one of the key pillars to doing the work of a yoga therapist is to first have your own steady daily sadhana or spiritual practice. And this sets the foundation and comes before holding space and doing any work with others. And I'd love to hear from you. I'm curious, can you tell me and our listeners what your daily sadhana looks like?
Whenever we talk about daily sadhana, again, there is importance to the practice, the abhyasa and vairagya, practice and detachment, Patanjali, that is prescribed by Krishna in Bhagavad Gita. So I love this question, that this is such an important perspective for all of us to check within ourselves. Where are we? Where am I today? Where am I heading to? And get in touch with ourselves and our purposes so we can be on the path and track of yoga. As far as my practice itself is concerned, every day I try to dedicate at least about an hour to my own practice. I have two little ones at home, so before having children, probably I had more time to explore and dedicate. But now it's more about the quality of the time that I give to myself. So in about an hour of practice, I do give this time to physical practices because physical activity is important. And Bhartrahari says, Sharira Madhyamam iti kalu dharma sadhanam, which basically is this body is the vehicle for dharma sadhana, doing the right thing that you are here. So my physical practices include asanas, surya namaskara, pranayama, relaxation, and some meditation or japa. Apart from this time that I set aside for the physical practice, I continuously make also an effort to engage in what we can call as bhakti yoga, the idea and practice of sublimation or surrender. And in this practice, there is a lot of japa, the repeated name or a mantra, and instilling into silence or stillness with the meditative aspect of the practice as well. And apart from this, a continuous check-in for the aspect or the anusthana of karma yoga. Every activity that I do, can I be as detached as possible? And every activity that I do, is it causing a greater good for everybody else? Or is it an interest that is only serving me? So the physical practices are there on the mat, but the ideals that needs to still need watering, grooming, nurturing continues throughout the day and different activities. That is why I tell myself I'm a lifetime yoga student. I don't know if this lifetime is enough to experience and fully be on the path of yoga, just with mere detachment, even that I'm on this path. So that is overview of what it looks like.
Beautiful. Thank you so much for sharing that. And it's been such a pleasure speaking with you today. I greatly appreciate it.
Thank you. Thank you so much, Michelle. Again, I'm so grateful that I'm getting to speak because, as I say, there are so many people in the field that are working, that are on the path of yoga, that are contributing. And I can say I represent the work, or I represent so many of my gurus, teachers, and many people who are on the path of yoga. It was truly a pleasure speaking with you. Thank you for this opportunity.
To learn more about Smitha and her work, visit vyasahouston.org. That's VYASAHouston.org.
This has been a production of Inner Peace Yoga Therapy. To learn more about us, visit innerpeaceyogatherapy.com. And by the way, the music that you're hearing today is from the John Stickley Trio.